Hi guys, welcome to another episode of We Are Curious. It's September the 17th on Friday, and there's a lot to talk about. First of all, this episode is brought to you by HISA, the coolest app for market information in Kenya. Check out HISA on the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store. That's where you want to get your market data. That's where you want to start trading on global stocks soon enough. Otherwise, welcome to yet another episode. Also, I'm co-hosting this episode with the one and only Felix Ochieng, who is a lead host in Bulls and Bears and Markets. That's where you want to find all things crypto, all things, you know, deep dives on all sectors. You can check out Bulls, Bears and Markets directly, exclusively on the HISA app or through any other podcast streaming app. Felix, how was your week?
Hello, everybody. I hope you had an awesome week. It's been a hot week for some of us. If you had the COVID jab, definitely you've not been sleeping. Yeah, but here we are.
Speak for yourself.
Okay.
All
right. If you had the jab and you've been sleeping, then very good for you, but at least not for me and a few guys that I know. But yeah, I know there's a lot that's really been happening across various financial markets, locally, globally, and we are also looking for a lot of stuff.
Before we go on, we have an honorary guest today.
Yes.
Please introduce yourself, Anastasia.
Hi.
You want to say your name?
You already said my name.
All right, guys, that was Anastasia, and we'll get to hear more from her as the podcast continues.
Can you say, like, Anna is sitting in because Nicole, who's been joining us for the past 2 weeks, is not in today? Yeah, but definitely, I know Nicole is joining us remotely. Yeah, you guys will be able to hear from her next week.
In case you don't know about Nicole, Nicole is the community manager at HISA. So if you've been receiving any cool emails, not the newsletters are from another genius. The cool emails, those ones are from Nicole.
Oh yeah, the ones that are coming from Hello at HISA.
Yes.
Really, really ones. Awesome and pretty much interesting. Those funny tweets and those informative stuff that go out there, the things that keep you glued about content, education and everything else. Yeah, that's Nicole.
Felix, downright to what we have today. What was something that happened in the week that caught your attention?
I don't know. Talking about art or markets, because talking about art, I know there's a song that's out by Calligraph. I don't know Calligraph, but that's something I'm hearing Chris say.
Felix, actually. Wrong podcast.
Okay.
I'm more thinking what happened in terms of markets, tech policy that probably caught your attention. For me, it's oil. Mm-hmm. Two things. First of all, Talo Oil comes out and says that, you know, 80% of the oil available in Turkana is still inaccessible for commercial extraction because of limitations in tech. And then still in the same week, IPRA decides that you guys are going to pay around 7 shillings more for a liter of petrol in Nairobi, despite a slight dip in the prices of oil import. I mean, that was something that really, really caught me up the storm, because it's something that will affect the prices of commodity and it will definitely push up the September inflation numbers. In some select, we already had a strike about it yesterday. We had a strike
on
Thicker Road.
Did we?
We did.
Okay, interesting.
We had a strike.
Because I saw guys online saying that there was nothing like that.
Well, we had people gathering on the road blocking access. For me, that looks like a strike. But yo, several matatu routes already added fare, I think by around 20 bob. So I am really, really keen to see how it will affect the prices of commodities across in the September inflation numbers.
It'll be very interesting. But anyway, I think we're going to see one of the highest inflation rates that we've seen this year, the rising inflation numbers. I think there's some of the things that we should probably start having the government do, say, on a week-to-week basis. You know, the same way we're seeing a lot in terms of, if you look at some of these global markets, an example, like if you look at the US, then the, you know, there's weekly economic data, things that are likely to affect markets. And it's more of, you're likely to know what's going to happen in the next phase. And like here where one day Njoroge is out there, Dr. Njoroge, sorry, he's out there giving you guys numbers for one thing. And the next thing you see is Ukur Yatani coming in with numbers. The president is giving you guys numbers out of a paper that somebody wrote for him. And then the next thing you see is the CS, Ukur Yatani coming and giving you guys a decline in GDP.
Right.
Yeah.
What else? Did you see what's happening with Safaricom and the smart meters? I know you're a Safaricom enthusiast, Felix.
No, I have stopped loving. I'm not going green anymore. I have moved. I have switched to Safaricom.
You mean from Safaricom?
No, from Safaricom to Safaricom. Yeah, like, okay.
You're beyond help.
You definitely don't get it.
I do not.
It's like I switched and I looked for any other network that could match Safaricom. And then you're coming in back in. The only thing that Airtel does better is Caro, who responds to tweets better than, you know, the other guys on Safco.
The other Caro I know is from Bolt, and I do not enjoy her company. But I was more of
thinking. Have you ever thought if this is the same Caro, the one from Bolt and the one from...
So the Airtel Caro is like the alter ego of the Bolt Caro.
Yeah.
No, and I do not want to entertain such vile thoughts. Okay. Felix, I am talking about the smart meter systems here. So we saw in the middle of this week, Safaricom announced a proposal for smart meters for Kenya Power that will do what? That will, I can't remember the exact words, but then the smart meters would actually sort of help to locate and it will help to especially locate and track power outages, was it? And maybe help guys read meters remotely. Did you get the story, Felix?
Yeah, so guys, in case you're getting this for the first time, Safaricom PLC, that's Kenya's largest telecommunications operator, they submitted to the Kenya Power and Lighting Company, that's KPLC. Actually, it's now Kenya Power PLC, yeah. That they had submitted a proposal for installation of $300 million worth of smart meter systems. And this is now something that now it's on KPLC's desk. So is KPLC even going to respond to this? That would be the first thing. But remember, one of the things that we're seeing here is Safcom is telling KPLC that, hey, you know what? We're going to use Internet of Things. Some of the companies that have really taken advantage of IoT has been companies like East African Breweries Limited. That's East African Breweries PLC that took IoT, I think, into the distribution of the fridge that they usually give out to guys early.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really worked out for them. And that was also in partnership with Safaricom. So Safcom is telling KPLC, hey, you know what, we can allow, we'll give you guys IoT, which will be able to track real-time monitoring of the grid, you know, and this would also really, really drop the system losses by close to 8% in 2 years. And I think Kenya Power has really, really, Kenya Power and KenGen. Okay, Kenya Power system losses have really, really been huge over time.
Right.
Yeah.
And
remember, Safcom is telling KPLC, hey, you know what? We are going to split the revenue that is generated from the system losses. That's about 71.7 billion Kenya shillings over 8 years. With 75% going to Safaricom and 25% to Kenya Power. And that is what happens when a company is mismanaged. Safaricom is telling guys, hey, we're helping you guys do your stuff, but you're going to take 75% of it. I thought Safaricom would be generous enough and tell Kenya Power, hey, we're going to give you guys 75% and we'll take 25%.
I think Kenya Power will definitely have to negotiate for better terms.
It could be about a 50-50 thing. But you know one thing, Ali? Right now, wherever at the place that we are at, Safcom is basically telling KPLC, you guys have nothing and we're giving you guys something.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how little it is, are you guys going to take it? But also, I think it would be interesting if Safcom would reduce. So Kenya Power would go in for this. It would be good to see the company turn back to profitability. And at least, and remember, like, I think on Wednesday, the PS for Energy mentioned that KPLC would KPLC could turn back to profitability. And if you look at this and we see, if KPLC turns back to profitability, then Safcom could actually do better, you know, by just bringing down these numbers for Kenya Power. An example of one of the things that Safcom would actually do is by looking at the contract terms and tell them, you know what, for the next 3 or 4 years, we're going to be taking, we'll be taking like 75%. But over the next, after three years, then we can definitely have a, we can relook onto the terms and probably say on a 50-50 basis. Because come on, I really don't think it's okay to tell guys that, hey, we are going to be taking a cool 75% of revenue, which if, because if Kenya Power doesn't give Safaricom electricity, if Kenya Power doesn't supply electricity to this country, the solar panel, the solar power adaptability in this country is still low. It's growing, yes, but it's still low. It's time to rethink this. It would be a bad deal. It's a good opportunity, mm-hmm. but it's a bad deal for Kenya Power.
It's
just, yeah, come on, 75% is no joke. You'd imagine if for every 100 shillings, somebody's taking 75%.
But then, Felix, aren't these terms supposed to, isn't the rationale of these terms sort of to allow Safaricom to recoup its investment within, say, 4 years, and then once they transfer the meter reading network to Kenya Power, Kenya Power gets to keep the whole thing?
Not 4 years, man.
No?
According to the contract, Safaricom is telling Kenya Power, hey, it's 8 years, we're going to be taking, for every 100 shillings you make, we'll be taking 75.
So after 8 years, Kenya Power keeps 100%?
No, that's the current proposal.
Mm-hmm.
After 8 years, what's likely to happen? Will we have a restructuring or what will happen next? The smart meters idea is it's an interesting bit. And remember, Ali, when Kenya Power was introducing the current prepaid meters, we had the same thought of whatever it is that Safaricom is proposing right now.
Mm-hmm.
Cut on system losses, and also ensure that we do not have a lot of guys thieving on power, you know?
Felix, I have a question, yeah? I get it that from where you sit, this is definitely a road deal in your power.
Okay, from an investment perspective, it is a road deal.
It is.
But from an energy perspective, come on. Okay, from a financial perspective, Kenya Power has nothing right now.
Do you think Kenya Power should maybe consider at least taking the deal? Truth be told, there's no way Safaricom is going to negotiate with Kenya Power.
Okay.
Given that they're proposing 75-25, it's highly unlikely.
Yeah, the best they could do is to bring it down to 70.
69, who knows? But Felix, don't you think that Kenya Power really needs this technology? Given that, you know, these are the same guys that announced that, you know, earlier, actually was it on Monday that they were actually looking for debt collectors that will help them sort of monitor, was it private debt collectors that will sort of help make sure that domestic power users especially pay back their dues?
I don't know if we should say Kenyans are bad in paying debts, considering the number that I listed in CRB,
mm-hmm.
and everything else. What to? Guys, pay your debts. You guys are bringing down companies out here and you keep saying that companies are not giving you the services that you do. But I think also one thing that Kenya Power would easily do,
mm-hmm.
is to do a lot of disconnections. Come on. If somebody's not paying power, and you know one of the things that you can actually have on various in term sheets that guys can actually do is to bring it in to a point where if you're doing a reconnection for electricity,
mm-hmm.
there's probably a full charge. You remember the 35K that guys used to pay for power?
Right.
If guys are not paying those bills, it would be time when we need to bring in some of these measures. But also the challenge is, who knows, guys will actually go back to thievery of electricity like it used to be some back in the day.
Which is exactly why Kenya Power needs this technology.
Yeah, KPLC needs this tech. But remember, Ali, this tech, the basic thing that you'd actually be telling Kenya Power is, hey, there's an outage here. It's just an IoT where if there's a connection that you're missing in at one point,
mm-hmm.
it will alert the system. Power is down somewhere else. Power is down somewhere else. But it also depends on the response time for Kenya Power.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about you, but there are times when I've seen Kenya Power, and this is a personal example, where you give them a call and they will take 2 days to just come to the site.
True. The SLA, yeah, last time I actually called them, the SLA was 7 business days.
Jesus, can you imagine?
That's a week and a half.
And you see, at least in Nairobi, it's good. You can call them, and a lot of guys, if a lot of guys would call them,
mm-hmm.
it would probably take like maybe maximum of a day or two.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at areas outside here, there are companies that have said they didn't have power, and till a point when the companies have resorted to doing their own electricity generation.
Right.
Yeah. Companies, these are now the things that are really, really moving the economy. And regardless, even me as an individual, the 100 shillings that I probably pay for electricity, or the 200 that you pay for your electricity,
mm-hmm.
this is going in somewhere. And I think system losses are some of the worst things for Kenya Power. They should figure out a way to bring it down.
What are system losses? Could you break this down? Okay, that's definitely something that we can look into maybe later. But
yeah, because I think maybe when we're doing an in-depth analysis for Kenya Power during the Bulls and Bears and Mr. Session, now we can start looking onto these losses.
And perhaps maybe I hope during the same period we get to compare the power costs of different countries and maybe get to answer questions. Why is it that electricity in Kenya is much more expensive than many other African countries, many other of its peers? But then before moving away from power, other energy sources like fuel, we saw that earlier also this week, that is on the 14th, IPRA announced higher fuel prices. And IPRA announced higher fuel prices, and it's bringing in much outra. Felix, did you? I know it's something that was well covered in the trading room. Is it, Felix? Could you take us through that?
Okay, guys. So here's the challenge. It was definitely coming in one way or the other. Whatever we've seen over time has just been something that has been holding it down. But I think we, for the first time, we really saw one of the highest in terms of the oil prices, you know, rising to the highest in 10 years. And I think this is one thing that we're probably looking at, because you're seeing oil jumping close to 6% to 134 shillings per liter. That is here in Nairobi. So that's one thing that we are probably seeing. And this is going to affect you one way or the other, starting from the amount that you pay probably in your cost.
Mm-hmm.
A month ago, Ali said it was good that the government had actually eased the restrictions on the number of the capacity that buses would carry. And for the first time, your costs actually, the cost of public transport went down, right, Ali?
Slightly, yes.
Yeah, slightly. And now it looks like we're going back to those levels, because...
Actually, it's not that we are going back. As of yesterday, most Matatu charges were actually charging the COVID rates and pointing the rise in fare to, you know, the rise in fuel prices. So, like, most routes will charge an additional 20 shillings. Especially in Russia.
Because, you know, one of the things that I think we've actually seen over time, Ali, and the government has mentioned this over, for a very long time, that they were working on a stabilization fund. You remember?
Yes.
And when they said that this would be able to cushion marketing companies, oil marketing companies,
mm-hmm.
from charging higher prices, because it's just to keep oil price, fuel prices stable. But now we're seeing this. The government is saying that, hey, we were not able to withdraw from the stabilization fund. And so right now, this looks like it's going to be the norm. And one of the things that guys should also be prepared for is that oil prices globally, crude oil prices, have also been rising.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing that I know we probably need to be worried about. Because if you look at it, oil prices globally right now, WTI is at about $71 per barrel, and Brent oil is at about $74 a barrel. One of the things that the government would have really done is, it depends on the model that the government uses to purchase oil or oil marketing companies. If they have a model where if it's futures, for example, it would be very easy and very open for the country to buy some of this stuff get into these contracts at very low prices.
Right.
Remember when oil hit, oil futures actually went to negative.
That was last year.
Yeah, that was last year. But it was last year, and the changes in oil prices locally, it was still very marginal. Yeah. And as much as, you know, the government would say, hey, you know what, it takes 6 months before oil gets into the country, so we should always look at a reflection for the prices for the past 3 months or the past 6 months. Actually, that's what they often say. It takes between 6 months, 3 to 6 months, for oil to get into the country. That means that the contracts that the country got into earlier this year, those are what we're currently looking at, the Ministry of Energy.
Mm-hmm.
But it also affects oil marketing companies. And in case you're wondering, guys, which oil marketing companies are here, all these petrol stations that you see here, these are oil marketing companies. Very few, actually, if you look at them, we do not have any that is doing active petroleum, can you call it mining? In our country, is it mining?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, whatever it is. In the country, and I know that's one thing we're also going to be talking about we do not have any active mining for oil in this country. So most of these companies like Rubis, Shell, I've seen Rubis really trend for a very long time. I think guys are just getting to learn of the French multinational company. If you look at the Royal Dutch, that's the Shell guys.
Mm-hmm.
And if you also look at companies like Total Energy, these are technically oil marketing companies. So, you know, one of the things that the government was really trying to do is to bring in a stabilization fund, where the stabilization fund would really cushion these oil marketing companies. Because one of the things that the place where the price really jumps, it's always just about that inflation bit, and also on the difference between the, I'm looking for the right term. Okay, I'll get the right term when we're going into the next bit.
Right.
But the government was really bringing in a fund that would ensure that companies are stable in terms of energy. But this is now not this is not the case anymore. The oil marketing companies are telling the government, and the government is actually giving them that leeway to expand their prices to a certain range because it's not able to cater for them. These are things that we should have started earlier on. These are things that we should have started the moment we had our first car land into the country, but we never did. We're thinking of this close to like 60, 70 years later, after wagons came in, because initially we had wagons, yeah, tomato, really depends on you. We used to have wagons back then. And the train, the diesel, the diesel locomotive engines. Yeah.
You know, I'm happy you mentioned Talo, because this week there's several pieces of, allow me to say, conflicting news that came from, you know, the oil drilling. Allow me to call it that, in Kenya. First of all.
Oh yeah, it's oil drilling, not oil mining. Thanks, Ali.
You're welcome. I always save you. Anyway. First of all, Tata Oil announced that the cost of the oil field cost will increase by around 17%. From 319 billion Kenyan shillings to 374 billion Kenyan shillings, just to realize the prospects of Kenya becoming an oil exporter. And the company, at least according to the Standard, justified these costs by saying that they have a new plan that plans that will scale up the project, resulting in a crude oil processing facility and an export pipeline. And according to the company, this new plan will also sort of help the country withstand low crude oil prices, like we saw last year, which we just sort of analyzed in a bit. And then another piece of interesting news came out this week, actually today. You know, the news on the increase in cost of drilling came out yesterday. The news that came out today was, you know what? More than 80% of Kenya's estimated oil, which is around 2.85 billion barrels, are inaccessible for commercial exploitation because of limitations in extraction technology. So first, the company says that, you know what, you guys, we're going to ramp up the cost because we feel like we can do this bigger and better. And then the next day, the company's like, yo, you guys, 80% of the oil we have here is inaccessible. What do you think?
I don't trust Talo. First thing, just to give you guys a few things. But I think the news that came in when they were releasing the half year, the interim results was pretty much interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The news actually saw shares for Talo go up about 9%,
mm-hmm.
In trading. And Talo also said that the CFO is going to step down in March 2022, so they're probably bringing in somebody else on board.
Mm-hmm.
That's the chief finance officer for Talo will be stepping down. I really think that it's pretty much interesting for the company, for Talo too, because there's a lot. First of all, you're seeing they're telling you guys, hey, we're not going to be able to deliver 80% of the crude oil.
Well,
cannot meet up.
Allow me to clarify. I feel like I could word that better.
Please do.
Yes. What Talo is saying is that the 2.85 billion barrels is what is in place.
Inaccessible.
No, that's all the oil that we have. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, I see it.
The amount of oil that can be recovered
is 2.85 billion barrels.
No. Felix, the 2.85 billion barrels is what we have in place. What can be recovered is 585 million barrels. Yes. And they're saying that that is what they can get as of right now. In future, in case, you know, we have better tech, we may have better recovery. But
for now,
qua ground, what is available, what can be recovered as of right now, is 585 million barrels.
So guys, we have 2.85 billion barrels of oil in Turkana. Iran has 157 billion of barrels of proven oil reserves.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I really don't know if this would be viable. Anyway, Uganda had also said they would be jumping in. And so, okay, not jumping into Kenya, guys. Uganda had said that they would start exporting oil. They're planning onto that bit. Uganda has 6.5 billion barrels of oil. Oh my God. Hi, Uganda. I am still your friend. I know we've been having a lot of challenges during these discussions, but yeah. For one, the one thing that Uganda is actually beating us on is proven oil reserves. 6.5 billion, but it's still very small if you look at it in terms of global numbers. Though if we can be able to manage that, if we can have it for internal consumption,
mm-hmm.
we would really have a lot more from within our country.
Felix, question. Oil was first discovered in Kenya 9 years ago. Where this is, I think this was around 2012. And you are more experienced in markets than I am. But then we've had a lot of setbacks when it comes to Talo. We've had, you know, we had the crash in global oil prices in 2014. We've had hurdles in, you know, accessing the different rights when it comes to, you know, the actual drilling in Turkana. We've had the almighty COVID from last year. Felix, what are we looking at when it comes to, you know, to Talo oil in Turkana? What's your personal opinion?
I think it's really much of a challenge that, and let me give you guys the most challenging thing that I find it's very difficult for me. Talo really gets into the country. Yes, they have the rights. Every company has a right to come in and tell you guys, hey, we want to do, we want to buy into this oil block,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and they can be able to start doing their mining or their drilling, you know, which is really, really okay. And this is, that's really perfect for
right.
The main challenge that I think we're having as a country, and most countries really have it, guys, to be honest, let's not only say that it's Kenya and Africa, but it's really, really challenging to figure out that countries are producing oil internally
mm-hmm.
and they don't have the capacity. Countries are drilling oil and they don't have the capacity to run a refinery over the same. It's a challenge. Because can you imagine, even in Kenya, we are actually just starting to, the country actually said they're planning, I think it's about 80 billion for an oil refinery, an internal oil refinery. Can you imagine, Ali, you produce oil and then you export it and then you import fuel? It's crazy.
I'd love to, Felix, I would love a deep dive on you know, Kenya's oil. And this is all the way from, you know, breaking down the terms that we have here, you know, oil in place versus commercially viable. What's the feasibility behind actually, you know, us importing oil versus drilling it here, us exporting crude oil and then importing it as refined, and given the oil reservoirs that we have in the country, this project definitely has it has a lifeline. What are we really looking at here? How long will we be able to benefit from, you know, oil in Kenya before we actually run out?
I think that is something that definitely brings in a discussion for the both in their session. And we can have that discussion. Now, when we're looking onto the energy sector, we can start one and just start looking onto the oil sector, the energy sector, the electricity sector now, you know?
Yeah.
So the energy, you break it down to even, you know, understanding the solar energy sector, which is something that I know most people really don't look into, but it's very interesting. In terms of, I think, exporting oil, Ali, it's a lot of politics, because even in Uganda, oil was first discovered in 2006, if I'm not wrong,
mm-hmm.
in 2006. And currently, that's when Uganda is actually trying to, you know, this is now the point when Uganda is trying to create the crude oil pipeline. If from 2006 to date, can you imagine? So maybe we give Kenya a break. We'll
right.
be there. We'll be there, guys. Yeah, I'm defending my country. I'm patriotic. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know, Felix. But let's look at something else here.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe more as we try to move away from the global, rather from the local space.
Mm-hmm.
Kenya is actually, we're waiting for the UK to, you know, review its red list. And I know that's something that Nicole is following closely. And I think the UK is supposed to review its red list. Is it today or tomorrow? Just to see whether or not some of the countries that were in the red list, like Kenya and Pakistan, are going to be transferred to the green list to allow.
What's up with you in Pakistan?
I love the rice.
Okay. Oh my god.
Yep.
I didn't
love
expect
rice,
that, but
love
yes.
the rice. We're waiting to see whether Kenya will actually make it out of the red list. And in case we do make it out, what will happen is, I guess, Kenya travelers from the country will be finally be able to fly to the UK.
Guys have been flying. Just say there's been a lot of restrictions to
right.
those flights.
Okay, Felix. What do you think we're looking at here? You know, when it comes to you know, the different restrictions that guys from Kenya have been facing. You know, given how we've been handling the COVID-19 pandemic, and Felix here, I'm looking at our
who's
positivity.
We? Who's we? Who's we again?
This is, come on, cut me a break. When I say we, I'm talking on behalf of the country. Not necessarily proud.
At what capacity?
But then here we are. I am talking about, you know, our vaccination rate A, B, our positivity rate C, the effect of the different measures that we've put that we've put in place, do you think we'll be able to, or do you think we'll be out of the red list anytime soon?
First of all, can I say, apart from getting my job, everything else has been
new.
I took my job, and then after seeing that government officials were actually taking an advantage of the pandemic for, okay, a few government officials, not all of them,
mm-hmm.
but it really got sickening when you're seeing government officials or a few government officials taking advantage of the pandemic for their personal benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think during that time, that is the time when I personally stopped watching, following closely on the COVID numbers. But I have been following it whenever they come up. And I think we're not so bad. The vaccination rate still really stands at a very low level.
Mm-hmm.
But it's pretty interesting to see just what we'll do. Though, let's be honest, Ali, do you really think we're going to get out of that list?
I don't know, but then what I do know, however, is from internal sources in the government, what we're likely to see.
So you have sources in the government?
Chill. Allow me to give credit where it's due.
Jesus.
I wish I had internal sources in the UK government. I do not, at least not at the moment. But then what we're seeing is, Felix, people that have received the first and the second dose,
mm-hmm.
might face less restrictions as compared to other people. And also, the key concern of the red list, or rather what something that we anticipate, is countries that are showing more variants might bear the brunt end of the stick. But then there's hope for us.
Okay.
Yeah. The ministers were together today morning to sign off the plans and make the announcement, but I haven't seen it yet, so I guess we'll have to wait a little bit.
Yeah, I have also tried checking into that. Still nothing on my end. But let's really hope things turn out positive for our country, you know, for everybody else who's really moving into in and out of the UK. And also, guys, this would be a good moment to really encourage you guys. If you have a possibility, if you have an opportunity, you can always feel free and take the shot. Not the gun, literally, but you can go in and take the COVID vaccine if you can. I know a lot of guys have really had concerns about it, but I think if there are concerns that we can handle, that would actually be better, you know, rather than you getting infected and probably getting to die from COVID. We hope you don't get to die, but yeah, don't get sick. The one of the best ways you can handle this is by getting the jab. Yeah, so that's one thing I know you guys will be looking into. But the red list, it's still here, and so that's one thing that you probably have to look at. And Kenya is in that red list, at least for now. And there's a lot that guys really need to understand. But let's hope we go into the green list, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to tell, but I guess as guys pick up the vaccine,
Jesus, and I'm just looking at the UK red list, oh my god, and looks like they have almost every other country in the world. But it's very weird how not Kenya but Africa tops that list, you know.
I mean, low vaccination rates,
come on. We know it. You don't want to say it, but we know it. Let's proceed.
No, of course, apart from the other thing, low vaccination
Ali,
rate.
Ali, you had a con- this is a conversation you can actually have with Her Majesty.
Really? Yeah, I should try and get her on the podcast again.
Exactly. And in case you're wondering, Ali, you can tell them where to get the podcast and who you were talking to.
So we did a podcast with Her Majesty's Trade Commissioner for Africa, Miss Emma Wett, and on generally how the COVID-19 pandemic has affected trade between the UK and the continent, some of the things that we can expect, you know, with new developments like the vaccine. You can check it out directly, exclusively on HISA. But then again, if you're a letter doctor, first of all, you need to change your. But then if you don't want to change, you can also find it on our podcast. Just go to Spotify, search Kenyan Wall Street. You're going to find it there. You can go to podcast.kenyanwallstreet.com. Also find it there, or any streaming app that you use. If you use CastBox, if you use Google Podcast, if you use Deezer, whether, just go to the Kenyan Wall Street podcast. Such Emma Wade, and you're going to find it.
And guys, news just coming in right now is Kenya has been removed from the UK's red list.
Yes.
Yeah, as of 22nd, on the 22nd of September. So pretty much interesting. And then also something that's really coming in that would really affect Safaricom Ethiopia is that, okay, not really Safaricom Ethiopia, but investments in Ethiopia, a positive sign. We are seeing that earlier today, US President Joe Biden signed an executive order authorizing an imposition of sanctions on parties responsible for the Ethiopian conflict mm-hmm. in the Tigray region. So that is until the parties either choose to, you know, cease fire and to agree to dialogue. And come on, that's going to affect our Nobel guy.
Our Nobel guy, Abi.
Yeah.
Affect him how?
Come on. You think he's not responsible? He's on the government side. He's responsible.
Break it down further for me. Sorry, I'm not the best.
Okay, so you know what really happens is mm-hmm. the parties that are responsible for the Ethiopian conflict, and definitely you know that Abiy has his soldiers as well on the other end. And also we have the guys in the Tigray region, the northern Ethiopia, also probably locking it on. And this might also affect Eritrea, that has had its soldiers, allegedly had its soldiers into the Tigray region as well.
Right.
Yeah. It should be a challenging bit. Yeah. But the good thing right now, guys, is as from the 22nd of September,
mm-hmm.
you'd definitely be looking into the red list for, you'd be traveling free, you know, without all those hassles of getting your quarantine and stuff like that. Yeah. And so that's really an interesting bit that for us, we really have to look at. Ali, I know this is one thing that you've probably been following as you probably plan to travel.
To the UK? And to do what? Felix,
I thought you were going to interview Her Majesty the Queen.
Zoom. Really, Zoom.
Yeah.
Anyway, happy for us. Yeah, it's good that we're finally off the red list. Felix, there's another piece of news also about what's happening in Ethiopia. I think one of the investors gave a green light. Do you wanna go deep into that?
I know earlier today, it was reported that Vodafone, is it Vodafone or Vodacom? These companies, come on, one of them should just change their names.
Really now?
Yeah, like they can pick what name to go with. But I think earlier today we saw Vodafone actually say they committed.
It's actually Vodacom Group.
Okay, guys.
The Vodacom Group said that it will commit to fund Safaricom Telecommunication Ethiopia PLC. And Vodacom has 6.2% in the holding company.
6.2%?
6.2%. Vis-a-vis Safaricom, which has 55.7%.
Safaricom's subsidiary is being funded by Vodacom Group. So yeah, it's pretty much interesting, but it's also good to see that companies and multinationals that had actually committed to being part of this journey
mm-hmm.
for Safaricom Ethiopia, it's probably coming in live for them. And it's a good thing. We here we're seeing that the company, that's Vodacom Group, saying that they will still continue to fund their part of the investment for the company. And Vodacom had said today that there's an opportunity to build a world-class service in Africa's second largest population, that's Ethiopia.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one thing that they're willing to, you know, probably be into. And the news for Vodafone also came in at a point when, you know, the EU had sat earlier on. So Vodacom was releasing the statement also in regards to EU's approval, that's the European Commission's approval, to a joint venture between Safaricom and Vodafone and Vodacom, right? Yeah, for the entry into Ethiopia. I think it's very weird how we have countries have a lot of regulations. Can you imagine, Ali, before you partner, before Vodafone would partner, but then the approval has to go through the EU again. You know how interesting that is? I don't know about you, but if we had approval, you'd probably see a lot of times we only see the Competition Authority of Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
But to a level where it gets to, you know, various stages of or various levels of regulations through governments. It's really interesting just to see how this, how stuff like this usually happen. But I think we've also seen a lot that has been happening in terms of Safaricom Ethiopia. And guys, in case you ever come up with this was my initial idea. Safaricom Ethiopia, we can, the same way we have Safaricom Kenya as Eskom, why don't we call Safaricom Ethiopia as SEF?
As what?
SEF. S-E-T-H. Yes, Safaricom Ethiopia, SEF. Yeah, so in case Safaricom ever comes up with this, I wouldn't want to hit on Safcom, but yes, if Safaricom ever comes up with this, please guys remember I was the first. I will sue them and then they will give me money.
On behalf of the Kenyan Wall Street, Hisa, and We Are Curious, I would like to distance myself with whatever charades Felix is pulling.
No, guys, I just thought it would be an interesting bit. If they ever get away with it, it would be interesting. Yeah, I won't sue for that. That I just love the name Seth. If Safaricom Ethiopia is Seth, that would be interesting bit.
Right.
Yeah, and right now I know Safaricom is actually doing a massive recruitment in Ethiopia when they're looking for guys to start the boots rolling, you know. They have boots on ground, but we need the boots running, yeah. So guys will definitely be looking into that. And yeah, so still a lot more to happen into Ethiopia. We're waiting for the day Equity Bank goes into Ethiopia. We're looking on the way for KCB Bank to go into, could we call KCB KEF?
It's going to be that's going to be a wonderful conversation because we're...
You're actually having a conversation with Equity Bank Managing Director.
Yep.
Next week.
Group Executive Director.
Oh.
Go easy. Group Executive Director. Dr. Mary Omaya. And it's specifically on the expansion in DRC, some of the things that are some of the inner workings. You know, we get to see it in the news, of course. We read it in the company announcements and we get to hear it in the AGMs, but then I really want to understand like the rationale clearly, you know, beyond what we see on official news outlets. And also something that I am looking forward to maybe is if she's going to talk about some of the companies that Equity wants to go to, you know, in the recent
countries.
Yes. In the recent results, Equity announced that it's aiming for a presence in 15 countries by 2025. That's literally 3 years. So assuming that they're going to follow their word, that's massive expansion in the next 3 years. And I'd love to know.
Ali, how many countries do we have Equity Bank or Equity Group operating in right now? We have Kenya, have Rwanda, we have Uganda, right?
Yes.
We have Tanzania.
Yes.
We have the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Uh-huh.
And
South Sudan.
And South Sudan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they also set up, was it KCB or Equity that had set up a representative office in Ethiopia? They don't have the license yet to operate banking services.
It's actually Equity.
Equity
is on that has a representative office in Ethiopia.
In Ethiopia. So currently they have around 7 and they're looking to get to 15. And there's also the time when Equity said they were getting into Southern Africa. I don't know which countries or which acquisitions they were probably doing, but I think it's also an engagement that they would probably be having. They might probably have that conversation with the George Forrester family mm-hmm. that sold them the stake in DRC. It would be interesting because if they acquire, but KCB also has that leeway because remember Atlas Mara really has, which KCB has been looking into, has a larger footprint in Central and Southern Africa. Yeah, but it really calls for a point when we're seeing local banks really moving into spaces that a lot of guys have often thought would be for some other African countries that always think they're bigger than others. Yeah. The bigger brothers, you know, definitely we have South Africa, Nigeria, looking at other African countries as smaller brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it will be interesting. Let's just hope that the way equity has been run over time continues to be the same. At least for the past 20 years, there's been a lot in terms of changes.
Or better.
Yeah, for equity. I think Equity Bank is one of those first companies that are actually sharing corporate structures that we've in our country, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they did that during the presentation for the financial statements, and everybody was like, hey, what's happening? We've never seen this before. We only see this in companies, in global companies, companies like Amazon, you know, giving this out during the investor presentation. What game plan is Equity Bank having? Equity Group. But it's pretty much interesting, and we'll just be looking at what changes this would have on the shareholder book. But guys in equity, please pay us dividends. Jesus.
I know that's a question that you definitely want
and
to
please,
ask. Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe you might want to ask her what are the stakes for the shareholder in the expansion. It would also be interesting to have subsidiaries for Equity Bank, for Equity Group, list in other markets. You know,
mm-hmm.
An example is it's time for us to see equity, probably, let's say, if Congo ever comes up with a stock exchange, then it would be interesting just to have equity BCBC, that's how they call it.
Right.
Yeah, if it would list on the stock exchange there. That would be one way to really look at it. But yeah, that's just an opinion. It would be interesting to see companies list onto various markets. And we're really hoping Seth becomes one of the companies to list in Ethiopia.
Really? Wait, did you just call it Seth on air as if it's a real...
Okay, Safaricom Ethiopia. Because Ethiopia recently put in legislation which would allow for regulation around a stock exchange. And there's a high possibility, because they say that when the Ethiopian Communication Authority gave the second bit where they're announcing for guys to buy into 40% stake for Ethio Telecom. And they're saying that a small percentage, probably about 5% or 4%, would be going to the public, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that could be one of the ways to activate the stock exchange for Africa's second largest population.
Away from equity. Something else that caught my attention in global markets is Zuckerberg. I know.
Is it Zuckerberg? Who's he? Tomato, tomato?
Well, Zuckerberg, depending on what you want to do with the U. Zuck announced that WhatsApp is launching
Yellow Pages.
I don't want to call it Yellow Pages. it's a Yellow Pages like feature, okay?
Do you guys remember back then when growing up, and you'd always see that ad that said, let your fingers do the walking, and we thought that Yellow Pages would never come to an end?
How old are you?
Okay, guys. Not saying it.
I know it's something that Nicole is commenting, is following, but then WhatsApp is testing a Yellow Pages like business directory feature. And you know what? This is the feature is currently being piloted in Brazil. It's the second time they're testing a feature in Brazil. Remember, there were also
the WhatsApp payments were actually
piloted in Brazil. Not, and why not India?
Have you heard that meme for? No, I'm not saying it on air.
Right. Really, that's where you draw the line, huh? Anyway, so WhatsApp is piloting the business directory feature in Brazil, and essentially, I think it's just opening up ways in which its users can find small businesses. So, if and when that feature goes live in whatever market you're into, as you listen into this podcast, you will be able to search and find any shops, services, you know, restaurants, grocery stores that have a presence on WhatsApp. So you could simply go on WhatsApp and search for your favorite local business, and you're going to find it there, and you're going to be able to chat them directly. I think this is brilliant.
It's brilliant, but...
But what?
No buts. Let me stop being the anti everything.
Before we actually let you ruin it, Nicole wants to talk about it. Could you let her in, please?
All right. Okay, Nicole, you have something about this bit. Yes, you can jump in. I told you guys Nicole was actually in just somewhere outside. But yeah, she's in. Nicole, you want to touch onto that bit?
Hi, yeah, sure. I mean, I'm very excited for this new feature. We've seen previously Facebook and the family of apps, and which is WhatsApp and Instagram, really pushing in-app shopping features and e-commerce features to support businesses, especially because the online retail sector has really boomed. Mm-hmm. During this COVID-19 pandemic. And this WhatsApp Yellow Pages like feature is really exciting. I feel like it's a brilliant way, and it's making work easier for us. It's probably giving Google competition, because after Yellow Pages was like redundant, we were relying on Google, and now WhatsApp is bringing this in, this feature, which is very exciting, because most of us, I know, we use WhatsApp on a regular basis, and for me to be able to just go on WhatsApp and search for business location contacts, like just like that, that would be amazing. So I'm excited for this feature. I can see it's only in Brazil currently, and the next country that they're testing is India. I heard you mention that early. So yeah, mm-hmm. India is actually the next target.
Of course.
And yeah, hopefully it will reach us real quick. I'm really excited for it. I cannot wait. Zuckerberg is doing good to me. Yeah. Bye.
Thank you. That was Nicole, our correspondent, reporting live from where? I'm not going to say. Felix, this is what I think, yeah? Remember how we still don't have a clear way which WhatsApp is monetized? Look at it this way. WhatsApp has WhatsApp for businesses, essentially allowing business to, you know, sort of stand out from, you know, other WhatsApp users. Businesses can create a catalog. Yeah?
They have refused to verify my business. As much as it's a personal business, I'm selling pens.
Chill. WhatsApp usually verifies a business account.
Yeah, they actually do.
I had no idea, man.
Yeah, they do. So guys, I'm selling pens. If you want, you can
Felix,
get me on.
If you
want
to promote your business here, you have to pay for that, Felix, and you haven't done that.
They actually said 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Thank God, that's a placebo. Anyway, so remember how WhatsApp still doesn't have a clear path, or rather a clear revealed path to monetization? So these guys have a standalone app for businesses, yeah? And then they add features like catalogs and shopping carts, yes? In select markets, in this case, well, Brazil and India, they offer in-app payments. And remember, WhatsApp is one of the most used messaging platforms on earth. Last I checked.
Can we just say, apart from messages on text, WhatsApp comes second?
I don't have figures, and that's why I don't want to call it. But then the last time I checked, WhatsApp was bordering around 180 million users globally, yeah? So with Facebook launching listing.
WhatsApp is the top,
mm-hmm.
having up to close to 2 billion.
2 billion.
Monthly users. That's monthly messages. Could actually be more.
Sorry, I'd like to clarify, they're close to 180 million people globally was on WhatsApp business. My bad. So on WhatsApp business, guys, not the whole of WhatsApp.
Okay. Looks like Facebook Messenger is also really doing a little bit good.
But then have you seen what Facebook is doing? On Facebook, they launched markets, and they keep
That's
tweaking.
Marketplace, not
Marketplace. Sorry, Marketplace. I'm really having too many gas for today, aren't I?
I am not. I don't use Facebook, guys. FYI.
Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, so they launch as a business, put catalogs in business, put shopping carts, testing in-app payments, and now allowing you to search. Well, you by you I mean people in Brazil. You guys chill. allowing its users to search for businesses, WhatsApp is slowly morphing to a fully fledged e-commerce site.
You know what feature? By Facebook.
No, it's not. No, it's not. They wish. But anyway, think of it this way, Felix. You know, once WhatsApp allows you to actually click on a WhatsApp story for business and go directly to checkout with inner payments, then WhatsApp is a fully fledged commerce site.
Yeah, and then that is when now we should have...
That's when monetization is going to come in.
Yeah, and that's where it should really actually come in as well, and just, you know. That's where we should have taxes come in. Care, guys. Hope you guys are with me on this.
If you could start with Google, I'd be happy.
Come on, yeah. They're already doing that.
Google services.
Okay. Yeah, but come on, guys. Let's talk about this. Kere, I know Kere is listening. Yeah, definitely. A tax guy, and sends us some crazy Kenyan who's looking at me like, hey, you still want more taxes?
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't want more taxes. Kere, please don't listen to this guy. He's not talking anything.
Anyway, so yeah, that's what we're looking forward to WhatsApp. Maybe Felix, as we wrap up, anything interesting that happened in crypto? Apart from the fact that, I feel bad for saying this on air, today I learned that crypto is a safe word for Elon Musk. That's not something that I wanted to know. But here we are.
A very interesting thing that happened yesterday is that the ECB president, that's Christine Lagarde, actually said that, hey, you know what? Crypto is nothing, full stop. That was in her own words, Ali.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Like, her explanation is this. Even in countries that, like an example is, in countries like El Salvador,
mm-hmm.
that have actually gone in and accepted Bitcoin as a formal currency,
mm-hmm.
when you go into that checkout, it's still valued on the dollar.
Right.
And she said, crypto is nothing. Let me be very simple. Let me just say, yeah. She said it like, hey, you know what? Whatever it is that guys are talking about on crypto, it's nothing. Let me not imitate her. But it's very interesting just to see on to what level countries are actually moving into. But one of the things that it's really happening is that Wall Street is having a few trading groups that are looking into crypto markets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but another thing that is also worrying is about 60 South Korean crypto exchanges will be suspending their services.
Why?
Next week. Yeah, it's partial or full suspension of trading because of a new regulation, which is coming into effect in South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
South Korea has one of the most active crypto markets globally. In terms of exchanges, what most guys don't know is some of the companies, like an example is, I think it's Bitfinex.
Yeah.
Is actually a South Korean company. It's Hong Kong based. Okay, it's Hong Kong. Yeah, but I know we've had some of the trading companies in okay, Hong Kong is in China. Yeah, not South Korea.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know, Felix. What's something that you've
been looking at? Yeah, but companies like Bitthumb, Coinon, Cobit, Upbit, those are some of the largest trading companies in South Korea. And I see this is going to be a challenge for guys in South Korea, and also guys who are using some of the services. So you might probably want to wait until the evening. So what's really happening is, there's a new trading, there's a new tax regulation which was affected in South Korea about regulating cryptocurrencies. And this has been a discussion that has really been happening for a very long time. And now we're seeing this coming in. And the best thing that crypto markets are doing, and they're telling guys, is, hey, you know what? We are actually going to hold this down. And we're not going to provide the service anymore. If you want to tax us, then let us at least stop it. And yeah, but that's one of the things that That's one thing that is very interesting. One of the things that companies can actually do is to transfer, you know, have registrations. And if you want to start a crypto exchange, this is the time when Cayman Islands could really become good for you. Yeah, but I'm not giving you guys that idea. KRA, we need those taxes to run this country. We have a whole expressway to pay for.
Right.
Yeah.
Felix, this is actually all we had for today. If you're
really
yes, this is all we had for today.
God, I felt like we still have 2 more hours to go.
No, we're not making the Hobbit, Felix. This is all we had for today's podcast. If you joined us from wherever you joined us, thank you for joining us today. Felix did not use the keyword interesting as much as we expected him to. That's a good thing. Tune in for Markets Monday. On Monday at around 9:45 a.m. It's going to be a lot of good things to discuss. I know something that will keep Felix excited for the weekend is Longhorn Publishers.
Oh, guys, Longhorn is back into profit. Yes, and looks like that those CBC stuff are working. You've seen a lot of guys complain out here about CBC.
Yeah, the fact that you have to buy 12 textbooks for a kid.
Yeah, and the fact that your kid is being told to take you out so that you go to your local market.
I am
you're being told to go to your local police station, guys. I saw that and I was like, go to your police station. Take your parent and go to the police station and ask the policeman questions.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, guys, I know we really want to get close to them. But it's slightly too much onto this. But I think it's really interesting, guys. Longhorn is back into profitability. The profit margin is still pretty small, but it warranted a push for about 3.5% on the market, with Longhorn closing at about 4 shillings and 14 cents. That's up from 4 shillings where the stock had closed out on the previous week.
Right.
The stock had quite a small volume, to be honest, about 346,000 shares that were traded on the market. But this was also really, if you look onto the volumes that have been trading over time, this was actually something that was good for the company. If you look at it for the past few weeks, yesterday, Longhorn only moved 5,100 shares. The last time that this has actually happened is the last time we saw anything above 100,000 for Longhorn, at least not over the past 6 months. So yeah, really much of a challenge. Yeah, but it's because everybody, you know, we're all waiting for this. So guys, in case you're seeing those, whenever kids are going back to school and coming back from school in every 3 weeks, it's interesting because Longhorn is making money. So guys, continue buying those CBC books, support a company that's listed on the market. This message is not sponsored.
Right. I don't know if we have anyone who has questions listening on Twitter Spaces or Telegram. Felix?
All right, guys. So yeah, I guess that's it for us for today's session on We're Curious. We thank you guys for joining in. If you have a question, if you have a comment and you're on Telegram or Twitter, this is that moment when we give you a minute or two to shine on the show. So yeah, if you're on Twitter and you have any question and you probably want to comment, there's a feature where you raise your hand. If you're on Telegram, you can do the same. Let's start with Twitter. Anybody on Twitter asking any question? None. Let me really see. Okay, yeah, there's none on Twitter. But thanks a lot, everybody who joined us in on Twitter. I hope to see you guys on Monday during the Markets Monday session. On Telegram, I know Chuck, you have something to say. Hi, Chuck. Yes, Chuck.
It's been a minute.
Yeah, it's been quite some time.
Yeah. I have nothing much to say, but just like Nicole, I'm excited for that WhatsApp feature.
All right, awesome, Chuck. We'll keep you posted onto that.
All right, thanks, man.
All right, okay. Okay, everybody, thanks a lot for joining in. I'm seeing there's no other question. Maybe for Nicole to come in and just say a last word. Nicole, please keep us posted on the bit of the WhatsApp yellow pages.
I will, guys. I will. I got you.
All right. Okay, guys. Thanks a lot for joining in, and have a lovely weekend. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.